I'm going to say a little prayer, and then we're going to just do this. It is what it is. God, thank you for the opportunity to be well enough to do this, to have the vibrating vocal cords and the mind that can put words together. And thank you for Kale and his presence here. And we offer this time to your care and control, and that what we say here, what happens here, may be helpful to somebody down the road. In Jesus' name, amen. So, welcome to the Most High Show, but this is a special episode. This is the Mystic Journey version of the Most High Show. And so today, we're going to dive in to some topics that are really for the wanderer, the stranger, the person who doesn't quite fit in, that maybe at some point in time really felt like they had had things figured out. But then through an event, through something someone said, they began to lose their way. But there's still a piece, a remnant of what they knew that still holds true. And so they're seekers, searchers. You're like me. And we're in this together, and I'm just your co-journeyer in this mystic journey. Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about... My name is Reverend Christian Jansen. With me today is Steel on the ones and twos. And so the topic today is going to be a little free flow because, let me just say, I haven't done a mystic journey in a while. And one of the reasons is because for me, this whole process is it's a spirit thing. It ain't about the schedule I put down and I gotta run this, right? When was the last time a preacher at your church came up on Sunday and said, "Hey, I ain't got nothing today. Why don't we just kick it?" Well, that's how it is for me in this. Some days I'm like, I ain't got it. And I haven't had it in a while. And where I'll know that is when I go to write down a list and I start to try to formulate what this is going to be. And I start getting confused. There's no clarity. And when that happens, I'll fight it and I'll push through. But at a certain point, I'll just notice that, all right, maybe it's not time. And so I've been using these things and these teachings and in one-on-one situations when I'm running a group. So it's not like the voice is silent. It's just the voice over this in this predicament, right? This predicament. We're jumpy all over.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And this is the other thing. Every time I go to record for myself in the studio, we got tech issues, which is hilarious to me. I think it's God's way of humbling my ego that I wouldn't get too big and full of myself. But today we're going to talk a little bit about the steps. Specifically, there's a section in the middle, 4-7. And these are the catalysts for growth. And so Kale, he's got something that he wants to kick off. What was your you don't like that? What?
No, we're good. Just wanted to talk a little bit about an experience that I had. It started a few years back when I did a fifth step with my old sponsor. And I thought that I had been thorough in the moment until I got there in my fourth step, I thought I had done thorough. And what that is a moral inventory for anybody who is unaware of all my wrongs and defects and harms I'd done to others and resentments and things like that. So I got there to his house and I went through it all and oh, this is easy breezy. It's all good, you know? And he goes, "What else?" And I go, "Oof." And I feel this pit in my stomach form, and you know, and I say, man, that's it. You know, that's all I got. He goes, man, what else? And then I say, okay, here it is. So I let go of some stuff that I've been holding on to for years, and I, you know, talked about a little bit with some people, but I never just let go and just said, here's my stuff. I didn't trust this guy. You know, I didn't know who he was, really. I just met him a month or so before. And he said, okay, cool. And I said, cool? That's it? Cool? He said, yeah, what else? I said, well, man, come on. You know? So I had some more. He said, all right, what else? I said, I haven't told anybody this. And I said, whatever. And I let it go, and I told him. Then he said, all right, open your book. And we just kept on moving like it was nothing. And he didn't stop answering my calls. He didn't avoid me. He didn't tell everybody my business. You know, he loved me even though I felt like I wasn't lovable, right? So I'd say that to say this. I wish that I could say that things were great after that point, and, you know, everything was beautiful after that, but I learned that through that experience, it was a weight had been lifted over time. It was a progression. And 2 days ago, a buddy called me that I hadn't really talked to much in about 4 years. He messaged me and said, hey, you know, give me a call. So I said, what's going on? He said, man, I'm dealing with some drug stuff. And what can I do? And I said, well, are you trying to get sober? He said, not really. I said, well, you know, we'd go to a doctor, go to detox. We just kind of talked. But through that, right, me being sober and available, he out of nowhere just was like, I'm going through this really heavy thing. He said, man, I can't tell anybody this kind of stuff. He said, I can't, this isn't something I could just go to the bros with. And I told him, well, maybe you need some new friends. You know, people who are going to love you for who you are and accept you for who you are and not who you're not. And you know, it was a good talk, and I was trying not to hit him too hard with recovery and sobriety, because that's not really where he is right now, he says. But I tried to slip a little bit of that in there. But my point is I was able to let go of this weight, this burden that I had on me. And it wasn't immediately better, but over time, not only is it not so much of a chain or bondage on me, but now it talks about in the 12 and 12, our legacies of suffering, and how my dark past can light somebody else's future. And so I really take stock in that, because, man, I felt useless most of my life, internally. Not like I'm not able to do anything, but just I have this idea about myself that I have no worth. And, you know, this is one aspect that shows me that I am, I do have some worth and some purpose. And through that, I see that there's other worth and purpose in my life outside of recovery as well. But it was a really powerful moment for me. And then I got to go and share it with a group of people who the topic just so happened to be on the four step at a meeting. You know, and it kind of ties into the step of the month, which is step six, talking about defects. So it just all was this, it was an experience. It was a journey.
A mystic journey. Okay, so what's that? What's so important about what you just shared? What's the big deal? Why is this so relevant to you that you feel like, okay, I got to talk about this. I got to bring this up. What is it really that's really got you feeling like, okay, I need to tell this story?
Well, if I live my whole life based off this ideal or idea about myself, and all the decisions I make and the way I interact with my environment, the drugs and alcohol I put in my body are a direct result of this internal condition. And then all of a sudden, it's like I opened my eyes and awoke from a dream, like, oh, it's not a thing in that moment. It was like, and it wasn't like it happened all at once. It was like years later. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shit, that doesn't have a hold on me anymore. And it's not like I'm healed, but this one thing was taken from me. This one pain, this one hurt that I had. Where now I'm just like, you know, it's part of my experience, but it isn't my experience now. So I don't know. It's like the Band-Aid was finally ripped off. And it's not like I did anything to do it. It just was like, I don't know. It's crazy.
So there's a couple things there. So there's this rewriting of the past, right? So now when you're thinking about this memory of this thing that happened, rather than it invoking, potentially it invoked shame, guilt, remorse.
Yeah, yeah.
Now this memory has been redefined, because this thing that once brought you so much guilt and shame is now being used, and it's just been used to help someone who's in a very peculiar predicament.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So that's the significance for you, because maybe you're seeing this thing working now. Because this is a key piece to this whole, any kind of spiritual development, period. The key piece is the community. It's the giving and the receiving. Because, you know, I think a lot of people think about spiritual growth under the terms of receiving, right? Receiving from divine source, receiving inspiration, receiving an intuitive thought, receiving relief from the pain, emotional pain, mental pain, physical pain. And we rarely, at least the way I've observed it in our culture, we rarely see spiritual growth as something that is to be given as well as received. This is why I love the steps. Yeah. Because the steps are real clear on, oh, this is not just for you, right? It's a we program. It knows that, the steps know that we have to do this collectively. It's the redefining the past. Like, so much of us, we have these stories we tell each other, ourselves, you know? And I do this exercise with people, which is, if your life was a movie. So, like, you know, I grew up back in the day when there was this place called Blockbuster.
I've been there.
All right? So Blockbuster was a place where you would go to rent VHS tapes, which were tapes that had videos, movies on it. So you had to go to the store to get the movie. Not like it is today where you can just stream it, right? And so one of the things was, when you're walking through those aisles, to keep in mind, you don't have access to all of the trailers and information we have access to today on a movie, right? Cast, credit, we don't get to see multiple three or four trailers on it, right? And so what would really sell the movie was the box, and who was on the front of the box, and the title of the movie, and the tagline of the movie were really, really important back then, right? Because it told you what you needed to know about what kind of film you were just getting into, whether it was going to be an action movie or whether it was going to be a romance, right?
Yeah.
Based on the colors and who was on the cover, and is there an explosion? And so the stories we tell ourselves are like these VHS covers, right? And what happens is, so what would you do if you bought this, rented this VHS, and you brought it home, you took it out, and you put it in your thing, and you went to watch it, and this ain't even nothing like what's on the cover, right?
Story of my life, man. Story of my life.
So what happens is, here's the story. Now, all of these things we end up doing, we reverse engineer this thing. We say and commit to a story. I'm a piece of shit. I've always been a piece of shit. I've always been mediocre. I'm never really going to truly excel at anything, right? Mm-hmm. Where I got that story for this exercise is irrelevant. But for right now, let's just say that's the story. Well, now I need all the plots. I need all the characters. I need all of the music. I need all of everything that has to happen in a certain way to support my storyline. Mm. And so what I start to do is I perceive events in my life through this lens of this new narrative. So I don't see things as they are. I see things as I am. Mm. That is so destructive. Now what happens is, when we get into the process of spiritual growth, right? And I would say recovery is that process for me. When you get into this process of spiritual growth, it's about dispelling these stories. But you can't heal what you don't reveal. So first, you got to learn, well, what's the story that I've been telling myself, right? And that's what this, when you're talking about step four, it's about uncovering the story. When you're sitting there with somebody else and you're doing this step of fearless moral inventory, but you're doing it with somebody else, what you're doing together is uncovering the story. And so your sponsor, your spiritual director, your guide is looking at this and seeing patterns. Mm-hmm. And so they're seeing, okay, well, here's this event, here's this event, here's this event, here's how they felt, here's what this did, here's their part. Okay, they're starting to see, all right, here's a pattern of control. Right, there's usually big ones, right? Controlling, fear, selfishness, self-centeredness, deceit, right? So these patterns emerge off of the page. Then at that point, we're at step six.
Right.
Right? Which is to become willing to have him remove these defects, characters. So these defects, it's pointing to this list. So I have a couple books here. I have a ton of books here. But let me pull up one. This is from Breathing Underwater. All right. So it's, we are entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Right. So in it, in this book, he quotes a scripture from Jesus. Says, if I will it, of course I will it, be healed. What he's quoting is this scripture where a leopard comes to Jesus and says, if it be your will you heal me? Right? And Jesus' response is, yeah, it's my will. Yeah, I want to heal you. Be healed. Right? So, but what has to happen in that story, right, is the leper has to have the faith to get off his ass, to make the trek, to find out where Jesus is. Because again, dude, this is, you think Blockbuster back in the day, boy, this is back in the day, dog. There ain't no GPS. There ain't no, like, he's not checking in at the local tabernacle. So you don't know where this dude's at. So he had to find him. Then he comes to him and falls on his feet. So you see that there's a process, right? Even in this, Jesus healing this man, right? There's a process for that man to get the healing, right? That's key. Nobody like preach on that, but he had to travel, and that's what we do when we get to this point in time. So as you're now using, you've rewrote this story, right, this narrative, and you're using it now, you've used it to help somebody else, right? What was, without revealing the details of this, because obviously it was something gnarly, but what character defect,
yeah,
did this uncover? This act, or the story you told about this thing that you did or happened to you, what character defect did that uncover?
Okay. Well, for one, the biggest is fear. I think it's the underlying defect of all things in my life.
It uncovered fear because you were fearful to share it.
Yes, but also,
the act itself.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's like, say you're a kid and this is how you behave in society. Mm-hmm. This is societal norm. Mm. And for whatever reason, either before my drug use or after, you know, I don't think that's important at this point. Right. I'm outside of societal norm in all kinds of ways. Behavior and thoughts, and so the fear is I'm different, right? I'm not like everybody else. But the funny thing about that is my whole life it's like, oh, I want to be different. I don't want to be like anybody else. But then deep down I'm like, why can't I be like everybody? So I want you know, the best of both worlds, and I'm stuck in between the two, lost and afraid. So you know, the other defects are
Well, it sounds like what you just described if we were to go even deeper on this.
Come on. Is, you get a shovel.
Now, again, you brought this up, so you're the one that brought this to the table. So what is this sense about you and how you're relating to the outside world?
Rephrase that.
So there's something there between you and how you relate to the outside world, your place in it.
So you're talking about how I worded it as two separate things?
Well, I'm just saying, like, I asked you the question where it went to, and you kind of went to this story of this. I want to fit in, but I don't want to fit in.
Okay.
So what is it about this, the outside world or the universe, that gives you this impression that you want to be, but you don't want to be? And so you're, how would that cause someone to interact with the universe if that was their stance?
Well, I think one fact about that for me is, it's like completely out of control, right? I can't control what the cosmos or God or whatever, however you view this whole thing, right? I don't understand it. I'll never will. And so, the two responses are to run from or to attack it. And I think that's kind of like.
So there's something about control.
Yes.
So then where in your life did you lose control?
Before drugs.
Because there's at some point there was a story that kind of entered into your narrative that was like, you don't have control.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I guess no one told me that. It wasn't something that was instilled in me, but I don't know, man. We moved around a lot. Ooh. I didn't have a father in my life. Mm. I had a lot of very close family members, but I had like that, and that plays into this idea of I'm different, right? And so, and that it's such a funny thing because it's like there can be one seed of difference, right? One seed of abnormality that blossoms into another 100 forms of abnormality, right? I heard someone call it a maladjustment. That's one way, and then.
So there's a sense of control, right? So if you go just to fear, but you skip that control thing, right? Like you're doing yourself a disservice because that control character, that characteristic of you. And I don't even, to be real with you, I don't even like calling them defects, man.
what do you call them instead?
They're character traits.
Yeah, okay.
Because here's the thing. Let me give you an example. Well, controlling is one of mine, right? It's probably everybody's, dude. Sure. But let's just give you the example of controlling. Well, I'm an independent. I run my own business. I have this nonprofit. I do my own thing. So if I don't do it, it don't get done. There's no boss hitting me up about when them reports gonna be due. No one's hitting me up with the TP9.
Where's the TPS reports?
The TPS reports, yeah. So if I don't have a sense of control, right? My business, this mission of this nonprofit, these things that we're doing, it don't work. So this thing that I have, it will weave. I mean, you can do it in a 5-minute span. I can go from over-controlling to just the right amount of controlling.
Okay, but I want to ask you this.
So that's why I don't like calling them defects, because if I don't have any sense of control, so this thing that's still there in my life, this character attribute, it can be a defect, but it also can be an asset. So go ahead, what's your question?
So we talk about humility and how it's paramount, right?
Yeah.
I had somebody, because, a topic at a meeting one time was humility, and I knew the topic beforehand. I'd gotten a tip.
Uh-oh.
Talking to a guy that I look up to, and he was like, man, I hate humility meetings. Like, I don't know how to talk about something I have no idea how to achieve. And he was like, he's like, well, humility is just the ability to defer to someone or somebody else. So I'm getting, my point is with control and obviously in a business standpoint or in certain aspects of your life, like you have to have some sense of control and take charge.
But yeah, like use properly this character trait can produce discipline. Mm. It can put me in a position, which I am, to help other people. Mm. Right? because of this thing. So for me to think I just need to obliterate control from my life and just, float through chocolate milk all my life. You know what I mean? Like, that's not realistic.
Yeah.
I'm taking it to like an extreme. But this is the difference, is what it's integration. It's saying to these things that are the parts of myself that I don't necessarily like, and it's saying I don't need to obliterate these things. I don't need to kill these things.
Adapt them.
I need to adapt them.
Yeah.
They need to be right sized in my life.
So how do you get to that point?
Time. Acceptance. It's this thing, because here's the thing, right? Like, you went through something bad. Now you use this bad thing to help somebody else, right? So is it a bad thing?
Mm-mm.
Right? And this is the thing about the will of God. We like to take the will of God and we like to put it into these moralistic categories of good or bad, right? And there's a verse in the Bible that I really love that's true, whether you believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And that is, all things work together for the good of those who are in Christ Jesus, who live and walk according to his spirit, right? So for those people who are connected to this higher consciousness, everything works out for the good. Big book, we shall not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it, right? We see how it's going to be useful. So this idea that this is a bad thing, right? It's like going back to this, like, this judgment mind. And so if I'm looking at my character traits and I'm saying to myself, this is good, this is bad, I want this, I don't want that, right?
Yeah.
Who's in control?
Yeah, that's an illusion, man. And I hope, you know, that kind of leads into the seventh step, prayer.
Yeah. That is a God, I'm ready now that you would have all of me, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
Relieve from me every single defect of character that gets in the way of my usefulness to you and others.
Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Yeah.
So, I've talked about this seventh step before, but it's so important because I'm not being relieved of this obsession, of this over-controlling or over-self-pity nature, right? I'm not being relieved of it just so that I can feel better.
that'd be ideal.
But this, so again, we're going back to this group consciousness, this collective participation in spiritual growth. I'm not being relieved for the express purpose that I feel better. I'm being relieved so that I can be a part of the system, the part of the community in a more useful, helpful way. That is humbling, because it ain't about me. Even the me asking for relief and me getting relief, it's not about me. Like, I'm not getting the relief because of anything other than so that I can help someone else, or God can help someone through me, you know, which is what you did when you picked up that phone, when you showed authenticity and transparency and you opened yourself up, because you didn't have to.
Mm-mm.
But you were relieved of a character defect in that moment, or character trait. You were relieved of that in that moment. You didn't have that sense of control. You didn't have that sense of fear. It was magically removed from you on that phone, that you felt empowered to share this thing.
Yeah.
Right? That's pretty profound, man.
So what is it? I mean, what does that look like? I mean, I know you said to get to that point, it takes time, but I think that there is, I know what happened in my life to get me to, because what I'm hearing you say is that's a perspective change. That's a psychic change, like the book talks about. That's a shift of perspective where I can choose to view it one way or the other. And you got me thinking about that Eastern Koran, or how do you say it? Koran.
Koran?
No, it's like a proverb. KO, whatever. But you know, the one about the horse, you know, horse dies. It's good or bad, I'm not sure.
Right.
So it's like, it's choosing not to look at a certain perspective either way and just allowing, I was sitting here.
Well, yeah. But that's what I think is happening ultimately is there's this, you know, all of this stuff comes back down to like theology, right? Like, and you've heard of Adam and Eve story.
Sure.
And so it's interesting that in the Adam and Eve story, they eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, right? So to me, they receive this judgment mind. What's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong. And that ends up causing a lot of freaking problems.
Damn.
Because before that point, they just were.
Yeah.
Right? And they were able to see and be as they were. Right? And so that's a little bit of what I think is happening when we are growing spiritually now, is that we're deconstructing. We have to escape from this judgment mind. So this idea of like, is it good or is it bad? And what that parable I think is getting to is get beyond that judgment mind. Right? Get past that judgment mind. This is what, you know, you read your Tao, your daily Tao. This is what your daily Tao is getting to, right? Because the Tao isn't good or bad, right?
It just is.
It just is. So it doesn't mean that there isn't things like unnecessary suffering and that there isn't something to do, right? But it just means that in order for us to participate in the greater system, we have to let go of the judgment mind. So that's what I mean by it taking time. That's what I'm saying, you know, going on a retreat for 3 days and sitting in silence is a good idea. Why? You know, learning personal disciplines of sitting, of doing nothing. The art of doing nothing. Boy, I'm going to tell you, that's the hardest thing to do is to do nothing. But sometimes the most impactful thing you can do is to do nothing. Hmm. You know? I want to go back to this idea of, like, in this judgment mind, right? What's good or bad, right? And how in this situation, there was something that was bad that was used for good, so is it even bad anymore, right? Like, so there's this guy. He's sitting on a tree, under a tree, and he starts to drift off and he falls asleep, right? And he wakes up to the sound of horse clackling up to him, right? And this man who's on the horse has this big stick and he hits him in the stomach, boom. He's waking up like this, right? So he gets up and he's screaming and he starts running, right? And so the guy on the horse starts chasing him. And then the guy on the horse kind of like gets close to him, trips him up. He falls. He jumps off the horse. He starts punching him in the stomach. And the guy, meanwhile, is thinking to himself, why is this happening? This is horrible. This is terrible. This guy is beating me for no reason, right? And then after a while being punched, he throws up. And when he throws up a snake. So when he fell asleep, a snake went in his mouth. And that traveler saw the snake go in his mouth. The man that was his perpetrator, the victimizer, the one who was beating him, is now his savior. And so now he looks up to that man and he says, thank you, I owe you my life. And he gets dropped on his knees, right? And so this is the thing, is like we judge these things that we go through and these hard things that we go through, right? And we think to ourselves, why? But we don't understand the bigger picture, right? We don't see the things that we're being rid of, the things that are being expelled from us through this process of, Christians would call it sanctification. AAers would call it recovery, right? That this process of becoming made new, being born again in a sense, right? And we have to become born again, but we don't like that pain. And so one of the things that, you know, Kale and I are editing this film, this documentary series, one of the guys in the documentary series said in the interview that he likes to go to this trip and do this work because it intentionally puts him, makes him uncomfortable. Hmm. And that uncomfortability is a catalyst for growth and change. Mm-hmm. And it's so true, man. Because I just want to sit comfortably. Bro, that's all I want. I just want tacos, sex, and naps, dog. That's it. Bro, I ain't hard to figure out.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if I don't put myself into situations of uncomfortability, right? Discipline myself. I become disciplined. I get disciplined by life, by the guy riding on the horse who I think is my victimizer, and he's really saving my life.
By the Department of Corrections.
Yeah. So I think to kind of wrap this thing together, is you can't heal what you don't reveal. So we first got to bring these things up. That's why this thing is a process. You can't jump to no judgment. And you just, it don't work like that. You got to go through the process of judgment to get to the place where you can start to let yourself go of judgment, to get to that place of don't know, to get to that place of humility. You got to go through some pride to get through some humility. And it's just the process. So first off, don't try to skip the process, right? The second thing is, you know, that we are in a collective. So as we're growing spiritually, it is to put us in the position to be a part of something larger. And this is why I love 12-step rooms, is because this is what the anonymity means. We're all on the same level. Mm. Anonymity don't really mean don't nobody know who we really are. It means we are all on the same level. Where you come in with $1 million, you come in with 27 days or 27 years. When we sit in the room, we're all on the same level. What you got?
I got, I got scholarship to a rehab in 2019, and it was pretty nice, expensive. And I was, you know, at the time, a gutter level, you know, level 4 drug user, and to put it nicely. But I get there, and my roommate is a dentist from Birmingham. There's another guy from Kentucky who's a radiologist, and then some other guys. You know, so it's full of professionals, Delta pilots, doctors, and stuff. And I was like, man, I don't belong here, you know? And I had a friend that became a friend telling me, like, look for the similarities rather than the differences. And I came to realize, like, you know, I'm just like these people, whether they're homeless, a landscaper, or a somebody who works for NASA. If they got what I got, we're pretty much the same person in the way we behave. And so, like, you know, that was a really cool experience. I ended up being really close friends with this 50-something-year-old radiologist from Kentucky who shared a lot of the same beliefs and upbringing, and our lives just had a different fork in the road, but we still struggled with the same maladjustments, you know.
Yeah, you got tapped in. You tapped into that thing. Now that greater consciousness can expand, but in the beginning, it's just pieces. It's just little moments. And so, to let that be. So, number one is a process of revealing it. You can't heal what you don't reveal. Number two is letting the time take place, and then beginning to integrate what you find. Right, not try to obliterate what you find, but integrate it. Right, and I think to end it with, this the parable of the forgotten soldier, right, and the soldier who has been on a desert island, and the war's ended, and he's been separated from his squad, right, but he is still living like it's a war outside. And so he's hunkered down, and he's reserving his food, and he's killing things that get close and people that get close, because he don't know that the war's over. And when the when the generals all figure out that this guy's out here in this desert, and they go to get him, right? What they do is they throw him a parade. Just like they threw a parade for the soldiers a year before. And they tell him, thank you for your service. Hmm. Right? And that's what we got to do with these things that are like character defects. They're reactions that we no longer are useful for us. Thank you for your service. But I don't need you anymore. Hmm. You helped me get through high school, get through living on the streets in Richmond, Virginia. But now, it ain't like that no more. The war is over. And I don't need you right now. And thank you for your service. And the difference between that and trying to... what you resist persists. So rather than trying to fight these aspects of ourselves that we don't like, it's how do we accept, integrate, and begin to move forward in this collective. So hopefully everything that's been said today will be helpful on some level for you. It is the mystic journey, so you know it's supposed to be kind of a trip. And
I didn't think I'd be doing a therapy session tonight.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a cosmic journey, and I think we did that. We was deep in the mind of Kale for a little while. So thank you for your willingness to participate and be so open with it. And yeah, if you need help, hit us up. Contact at themosthighshow.com. Whatever we can do, we're here for you. This is Most High.
I didn't think I'd be doing a therapy session tonight.